वंदेहं श्रीगुरुं श्रीयुतः करकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातां सहगणारघुनाथं सजीवं साद्वैतं सारूपं वैजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदं and
It's very interesting that the universal governance gives these three roles to women. Now, if you see from that perspective, there's a lot of empowerment given to women, you know, in the universal governance. But unfortunately, human society tends to misunderstand the role of women many times. They misunderstand the power of women many times. So, strength is not always about physical strength. There is a very interesting story. In the English is fine, or if I speak Hindi, I'm not sure what the language is.
English is fine.
Translation. So, so there's a verse, very beautiful verse in scriptures, which really brings out a very important element of the role of women in society. This verse, it talks about what is beauty. This verse, this is from the Neeti. It says, Narasya avaranam rupam, rupasya avaranam gunam, gunasya avaranam jnanam, jnanasya avaranam shama. Avaranam means ornament, or you know, something like beauty device. It says, Narasya avaranam rupam, which means, among human beings, the ornament of a human being is beauty. So those are considered beautiful among human beings and considered to be, yeah, to be the world. But this verse goes on to say, Rupasya avaranam gunam. It says, more important than beauty is good qualities. In fact, it says, if you are beautiful and if you have good qualities, the good qualities enhances your beauty. And then it says, Gunasya avaranam jnana. It says, the good qualities is enhanced by knowledge. So if you have knowledge, the good qualities get even more beautified. And then finally it says, Jnanasya avaranam kshama. He says, the knowledge gets beautified by forgiveness, by the ability to forgive. So that means it's considered that somebody who has the ability to forgive has the highest level of beauty in human society. The interesting part is, if you actually study two of the most powerful characters, women in our scriptures, Draupadi and Mother Sita, they epitome this actually. If you see the Mahabharata and Ramayana, both the scriptures are about one woman being disrespected and an entire society being destroyed because of one woman being disrespected. That's the power that these scriptures talk about that women hold. But what people don't see is after that destruction that happens, then what is the quality that these women have? That's, according to me, that's more interesting than the fact that a whole society got destroyed because of this is disrespecting women. The Mahabharata, after Draupadi's, after the 100 sons of Kaurava, the rule of the Dhritarashtra of Kuru, and Draupadi's insult was arranged for, Ashwatthama kills the 5 sons. And interestingly, Krishna, Arjun, Bhima, they catch Ashwatthama and they want to kill him. And Draupadi tells, forgive. Krishna leaves the charge to Draupadi because she is the one who most affected, her sons are dead. Krishna, Draupadi says, forgive them. Arjun and Bhima, they forgive them. So this person has killed our sons. How can you forgive him? Draupadi says, that I know the pain of a mother who has lost a child. I don't want his mother to go through the same pain. Just let's go. So for me, that is the most touching part of Mahabharata. Because this quality of forgiveness of Draupadi comes out very powerfully. It's not about, you know, always being in a negative frame of mind. It's also about learning to let go. So that made Draupadi going to another realm of what a woman is. The same thing in Ramayana. After the Ram-Ravan war, Ravan was killed. Hanumanji comes to Mother Sita and he tells Mother Sita that Ram is dead. Now you tell me how to handle this 700 women who are loving you. And the certain rakshasi that Ravan had assigned only to torture Sita mentally. And they were torturing for 10 months, constantly troubling her. So after 10 months of being troubled like that, Hanumanji comes over here and he tells that you are free now and I want to do something with this. Tell me how you want me to kill them. Should I beat them up? Should I bite them? Should I tear them? Should I punch them? Just tell me how you want me to kill them. And Sita says, forgive them. Hanuman, she's bewildered. She says, what do you mean by forgive? Sita tells a story. Very interesting story. I mean, somehow in our scriptures, there is this whole mood of telling stories, you know. And at the sometimes the wrong time, people tell stories to each other. So you wonder what's going on in the middle of a fight, why are people telling stories to each other? But that's how knowledge is conveyed. That's how we make a point, you know, very powerful. So Sita tells Hanumanji a story. She tells him a story of a man who was running away from a tiger. The tiger was chasing him intensely, and the man was just running away to save his life. And somehow he runs away and he comes to a place where there's a tree, he climbs up the tree. It's on top of the tree. As soon as he sits on the tree, he realizes there's a massive monkey next to him. So now this man is scared. Tiger down, monkey over here on the side. So the tiger tells the monkey, throw the shoulder down. They're both animals. Throw the monkey. The man is showing. The monkey tells the tiger, this fellow has taken shelter of my tree. So he's my guest. I can't throw him down. The tiger tells, what nonsense. You can't trust human being. The monkey said, no. He's taken shelter of my tree. So this fellow becomes very happy and both the monkey and the man go to sleep. After some time, this man gets up. The tiger talks to this man. The tiger tells him, see, I'm hungry. I want to eat something. Throw the monkey down, I'll eat him. You can go, I can also go, please. This man throws the monkey down. And as the monkey is falling off, somehow the monkey holds some branch and comes back again. The tiger tells the monkey, I told you, you don't trust human beings. Now throw the human being down. The monkey says, sorry, I'm not a human. This is the story of Hanumanji. She tells him that if one monkey exhibited such qualities, he didn't change his nature in spite of somebody else changing their nature. So she said, these women who have been troubling me, they have troubled me because they were instructed by Ravana to trouble me. And because they were troubling me, why should I change my nature? Why should I become cruel like them? You know, I decided to let them go. So in my opinion, these two stories of Ramayana and Mahabharata really dig what womanhood is to another level. The ability to forgive is something that most men can't do. Most men, very different. So that's why, you know, we build up this whole concept of what really beauty is. Srila Prabhupada, the founder of ISKCON, he had a disciple. This one lady was, she was a Hollywood actor before. So she was really in the movie. So she had come for a movie shoot to US from Australia. And while she was in US, somehow she was on her return journey from America to Australia and she was in the airport. So in the airport, she met some devotees. She had a few hours wait time. So the devotees told her to come to the temple. So she left her luggage in the airport only. She went to the temple, the devotees. And then somehow the devotees told her, you know, Prabhupada is coming, what are you waiting? Waited, met her Prabhupada, and the devotee meeting her Prabhupada. The first thing Prabhupada asked, one of the first things Prabhupada asked her, are you married? Beautiful actress, she said, no. Prabhupada says, don't worry, I'll give you a good husband. This lady is totally bewildered. I mean, first time in her life, she's meeting this old man. And he's telling her, I'll give you a good husband, don't worry. So she just felt so touched by the way Prabhupada's feeling was, the way he's speaking. She's like a fatherly figure, you know. So she then decided to stay back. She actually never went back to her country. Never went back to claim her baggage also. After a few days, so she became like a proper devotee, you know, doing everything that devotees do, you know, wearing a sari, wearing regular devotional clothes and washing, doing all the seva. So one day she was washing dishes in the temple. And somehow a reporter came to know that this lady is where he's staying in the ISKCON temple. And he managed to get a picture of her cleaning pots, wearing a sari, even holding. So the next day, the newspaper carried an article. Front page, you know. Hollywood actress turns into a Hollywood studio thing. There were two photos of her. One is of real jazzy looks, and the second is a photo of her washing pots in a sari. And then this newspaper was brought in her photo of her. And when Robert saw this newspaper, and she saw these two photos, Jagatari Shanti, she was very embarrassed in this. Prabhupada asked all the devotees, which photo she looks more beautiful? Naturally, devotees, what would you say? I mean, it's most common sense that she looks beautiful in the whole photo. Prabhupada said, she actually looks more beautiful as a devotee, washing pots. And he explained what beauty is. He explained that the beauty of a religious entity engaged in the service of the Lord, that left the most beautiful form of the living entity. Here she is serving the Lord, no matter she is not dressed well or whatever, she is more beautiful. So she is happy. So this concept of what really beauty is about the inner qualities that one has as a human being. And sometimes, when the ego is very strong, sometimes it is very difficult to manifest good qualities. Even if you want to. Surrounding doesn't allow us to manifest good qualities. That's where the struggle is. So here I give you three examples of women who kept aside what the world thinks is power or control or whatever, and they decided to choose on applying their inner strength, what is their real beauty. One of the things that the world often does to us is it starts comparing us. This whole concept of men to women comparison, you know, it's actually madness. Everywhere people are talking about are men more superior, women more superior. Can women do everything that men can do? All this kind of thought process. So whenever we talk about human empowerment, whenever we talk about, you know, women being equal to men, this is the thought process that keeps on. It's all comparison. Actually, you see in the world, you cannot compare anyone to anybody else. Because everyone, every living in this world is a unique creation of God. Do you, and if you look at zebra you look at any zebra, you take any zebra, you never find two zebras exactly having the same stripes. You look at any butterfly in the world, you never find two butterflies having the exact same pattern. You take any animal in this world, you will never find, like for example, bats. There are bats, millions of bats in the world. Not even one time you'll find two bats having the same frequency. Never. Who sets this frequency? Does somebody do adjustment of the frequency? No. So what creation is? Everyone is unique. Where is the question of comparing men and women? There's no question of comparing at all because nobody is isolated. Everyone is a part of the system. Therefore, instead of competing, we need to learn to compare. The difference between competing and competing is when we learn to compete, we understand that I have strengths, I also have weaknesses. And the other person has strengths and the other person also has weaknesses. Society is designed in such a way that people can compete each other. And that's what, you know, life is for. Essentially, everyone is unique. Like if you look at the way in which men and women are, men and women speak different languages. I'll give a simple example. I'm sure you'll relate to this. When a man has an anxiety, you know, tension, some problem in office, some problem at work, you know, some business issues. Generally, the way men deal with anxieties and tensions is by thinking. So they start thinking a lot, you know. So if a woman sees that the man comes home and he's not talking really, the woman comes and starts asking him, what is the problem? Because the way women deal with problems is by talking. There's a fundamental difference in which, you know, the way men and women deal with problems. So the way men deal with problems is by thinking. The way men women deal with problems is by talking. So the woman comes and asks the husband, you know, what is the problem? Can I help you? That's what goes into depression. Because he thinks, she is thinking that I can't help myself. So he starts thinking even more. He goes into deeper thinking. And when she sees him going to deeper thinking, she knows that the problem is even becoming bigger. She keeps pestering more, asking, you know, can I help you? Can I help you? Can I help you? The intention of both is completely different. So just the language. So essentially, there is nothing called right and wrong. There is nothing called people are difficult. We end up saying, people are so difficult. Actually, people are not difficult. This is different. Nobody is difficult, actually. Everyone is different. And that recognition of the differences and acceptance of the differences is what is the first step in trying to kind of find a solution, find an answer. So when Mother Sita was, how many of you were here yesterday for the Sita Ram Kalyan? So anyway, let me tell you something very interesting about that. And yesterday I didn't have time to elaborate. Yesterday we literally had to run through it. I generally would like to speak that for like 3 hours. Peacefully, you know, aramsay. But yesterday I did a crash course along, 45 minutes I finished the whole thing. So one of the things that Janak Maharaj, when he is marrying Sita to Ram, handing over Sita to Ram, he calls her as Dharmacharinita. What are the words that he describes Sita as? So Acharya is explaining what is the meaning of the word Dharmacharini. Why did Janaki use the word Dharmacharini? So essentially, the word Dharmacharini means that when Ram is following the path of Dharma, Sita follows him. When Ram deviates from the path of Dharma, Sita corrects him immediately. And she does it several times in Ramayana. One time, when Ram was going to the forest, and he comes and tells Sita that I am going to the forest. You please take care of our parents. So Sita starts laughing. So what do you mean by take care of your parents? I am coming with you. So Ram says, no, you are not coming with me. The forest life is very dangerous. Sita says, no, nothing going. I am coming. So Ram tells her, you have no idea what a forest life is. And he starts scaring her, telling her that, you know, there are tigers and lions in the forest. In the middle of the night when there is a waterfall, the sound is so loud that you can't hear anything. You don't get sleep. So she tells him that when I was small, my father invited a lady astrologer to see my astrological charts. The lady astrologer predicted that this girl will go to the forest 2 times in her life. Sita tells Ram, I don't know about you, but I am definitely going to the forest. So she says, from that day only I packed my bag and kept him. So Ram is trying to tell her not to come. And Sita is like insisting. And finally, Ram really scares her, telling her that, you know, this is, you will not be able to handle it. I want to you to be having control. Finally, Sita really gets too much for her. She tells something that really hurts Ram so badly. She tells him, my father, if he was here at this point, he would have said that he has actually married me to a girl who is disguised as a boy. He's calling Ram a boy, and Ram, girl, really, you're not a boy. You are saying that you have so much power to protect me. You're so scared to take me. Then Ram tells her, no, you come with me. Ram just keeps quiet. This is the first example, Sita's Dharmacharinita. Ram is doing the right thing, she just quietly follows. So the moment she feels Ram is doing wrong, she speaks. Another time, when they were in the forest, Sita once spoke to Ram. She told him that you are carrying this bow everywhere. Why are you carrying it? You come to the forest to have a peaceful life. Why did you carry a bow everywhere? And she tells him a story. She tells him that there was a sage, very powerful sage. And Indra became very insecure of the sage. He wanted to, you know, somehow disturb the sage. So he came down and he came to the sage's ashram. And he told the sage that Indra had spoken to this very powerful sword. He told the sage, I just need to answer nature's call. Can you hold this sword for me? I can't keep the sword down. The sage said, fine. Nobody else is there, so I'll hold it for you. He was holding it. Indra went to hit somewhere. So the sage is holding the sword and he's thinking, what do I do with this sword now? So he says, anyway, I'm holding it, let me try something. There was a lot of wood in his house. He's going to cut and see what he cuts. He just picked it a little bit. and the log of wood cut into what? The shade of skin, rest of the power of the sword carries. He said, let me go out and try it. He went out of ashram. There was one big tree over there. He hit it. The tree fell apart. The sage became intoxicated with the power. He went around, started killing elephants, lions, you know, powerful animals. And he became so intoxicated that even this is what happened. He lost his father because of the power that the sword carried. So Sita tells this story to Ram, and she tells him, you will carry the bow and arrow, if you carry it, you have to use it. If you don't use it for the right purpose, you use it for the wrong purpose. Can you imagine? Sita telling Ram this story, you know, giving him a solid feedback. Of course, Ram explains to her that it's not that if he's in the forest, he's not a Kshatriya. Kshatriya doesn't need to have a weapon. Wherever there's a need for protection, Kshatriya should be there. And then he explains how the sages need his help. Anyway, the discussion just happened. But I'm just talking about how Sita points out, you know, to Ram's mistakes. So, what is this concept of balancing? So, the role of women, how they can act as agents of change is first, understanding that one need not have unhealthy comparison. That's the first thing. One should not do unhealthy comparisons, but rather learn how to play the balancing act. That's why it's very important that in every family you should have one person who is a balancer. If you don't have balancers in the family will go for a toss, and the balance of the family will go in one direction. In Ramayana, we find in Lakshman's family, Lakshman was a very volatile person. Very angry person all the time. His mother Sumitra was a balancer. Very cool and calm. Absolutely under control. She managed to keep Lakshman in balance. In Ram's family, Kaushalya was always very intentional. Ram was a man. Ram managed to manage his mother's emotions and help her deal with it. So every family needs balance. And the role of these balancers is to bring back balance. But if everyone tries to become like others, compare themselves with others, and want to act like one superior or the same, that is not. Therefore, rather than comparing, rather than competing, we need to learn to complete one another. That's the first and most important role that women play in society, the role of being balanced. The second thought is how women to learn to start accepting the realities of life. So, there is something very interesting about life. There is something known as expectation, and then there is something known as reality. Everyone has very high expectations from life. But the reality is somewhere else. So, the bigger the gap between expectation and reality, the bigger is the stress. Today's media adds so much expectation into your mind that you go crazy. India, but generally, you know, when you look at television, what do you see? All the advertisements, all the movies, you always see perfect perfect, flawless. So if you keep looking at perfection all the time on the television, then you tend to expect perfection from life also, people around you. But unfortunately, the reality is imperfection only, right? So we keep looking at perfection, and our expectation becomes that we want a perfection. But the reality is that there's always imperfection everywhere. For example, people, you know, watch advertisement of Fair and Lovely. And then the expectation is that if I also apply Fair and Lovely, I will also look like that. And then people apply kilos and kilos of Fair and Lovely. And they look in the mirror, nothing happens. So it's so frustrating. People are crazy with that unnatural expectation that life gives them. So expectation is so high, reality is so low. Same thing with relationships. You look at the movies, perfect couples. Sing and dance everywhere, you know, small others, just chemistry matches so perfectly. But reality, something else only. Massive size differences, you know, massive mindset differences. Massive income differences, yeah. And there's massive differences in habits, likes, and so, Now the expectation is here, the reality is here. And the bigger the gap between expectation and reality, the more frustrating it is. Therefore, it's very important that we start learning to align our expectations with reality for life. The more we align our expectations with reality for life, the more peaceful we'll be. In the Mahabharata, it talks about two women. And these two women had two different masters. And it's very interesting to observe the Mahabharata from this point of view. The reason, I mean, honestly speaking, there are two ways to see our scriptures. One is a pure devotional way. I mean, I can speak the pure devotional way very easily. And people love it. You know. But I personally feel that we need to also look at the scripture from another way, which is a little more practical and a little more spiritual. We can go on to the end of life talking about pure devotional way. Some people get a little disturbed in Ali, what is this, you know? Prabhuji is talking about Iran application from our series of scriptures. But that's the reality. Mahabharata, Ramayana, our scriptures are supposed to be helping us to live here in this life. We want to live, we want to go back to the scripture world eventually. But if we don't live stable lives here, and our mind is not stable here, what are we going to chant? How are we going to chant, you know, peacefully? We need a little more stability. And if our scriptures can really add that stability to our life, why not? So here is something from Mahabharata which might really help you see this point I'm talking about of the of life. This is a life of two women in Mahabharata, and Gandhari. I mean, Mahabharata centers around them literally. What they did and their mindset that they had reflects in everybody else in their family. Kunti and Gandhari's mindset, if you analyze, then you immediately understand why both Duryodhan and Pandavas so obvious, you know, but unfortunately we don't see it that way. So Gandhari, she was pregnant, she was carrying the Kauravas in her womb, and Kunti was pregnant at the same time. In fact, Gandhari got pregnant before Kunti. So now the result is going to be obvious. Whichever of them gives birth to the first child, that child is going to be the next king, the most obvious. So now, Gandhari is getting pregnant before, so she was naturally very happy because she was going to get the first child born to her. The funny part was, Gandhari carried the pregnancy for 2 years. Delivery didn't happen. 2 years. Can you imagine? Kunti had a birth immediately. In 2 months, she delivered the child. Now the question is, Gandhari was so frustrated about the fact that she was not able to deliver the child. Who sold this? No, it's nobody's fault. See, that's the point. The thing is, if Vyasa was not involved in her pregnancy.
I thought it's sorry.
No, sorry. So I was talking about who's faulted. It's nobody's fault. That's the way nature is. See, there are so many people who plan their delivery. You know, they plan that they will have a child born on Janmashtami day. I know so many people who do planning stuff. And invariably, it never happens. Invariably, the plan never happens the way it is. Why? Because there are two things you can never control in life: birth and death. You can't plan too much. Or both, birth and death. So here was Gandhari having a fabulous plan that she'll have the first child and the son will be the king. Didn't happen. So when Kunti's child was born, Gandhari was highly frustrated. In the frustration, she hit her own womb. And with the envy with which she hit her own womb, the envy actually got transferred to her child. It became a psychological slap on the self-individual. And therefore the child was born highly envious. Where did the envy come from? From the mother. On the other hand, if you look at Kunti's life, it's not that Kunti had a good life. She was born in a royal family, but married to a royal family. But most of her life she lived in the forest. You know, her husband Pandu, he made some mistake. Because of this, they had to live in the forest. So her children were all born in the forest. They were not born in luxury. You know, practically the whole of their childhood, they never saw any luxury in their lives. And Kunti also didn't see any luxury in her life. Now, if Kunti had to complain, she had other things to complain about. Right. Gandhari had her complaint about not giving the child, giving birth to the child on time. Kunti had another 100 things to complain about. Therefore, if you look at the two mindsets of Kunti and Gandhari, there are two different mindsets. And this is what the specialty of Maharaj is. This is what the specialty of Kunti is. That in spite of being in an environment where she had no control, she had learned to align her expectations with realities of life. Gandhari, though she was in an environment where there was some control at least, her expectations are way higher than the realities of life. And when life gives you realities, you can't push expectations on it. Then you'll be highly frustrated in life. And therefore, when Gandhari eventually had her son and then son became big and whatever the whole Mahabharata happened, at the end of the whole Mahabharata, when Duryodhana is really going through a frustrated experience and he's facing almost the world of losing, Gandhari tells him, you come naked in front of me. Because she wants to give the power of her tapasya to Duryodhana. Vyasadeva gives a very interesting understanding to Gandhari. He tells her, this is amazing concept in Mahabharata. He tells her that anybody who has done tapasya in their life, any kind of tapasya, any kind of austerities, the tapasya manifests in 3 years. If you see these 3 things happening in anybody's life, you know that person has done a lot of tapasya in their life. Vyasadeva says the first way in which tapasya manifests is in the form of vani. So if somebody has the ability to speak words that really penetrate your heart, touch your heart, that person has done tapasya in their life. Second way Vyasadeva says that the form of tapasya manifests in the form of vichara. So if somebody has powerful thoughts, you should know that the person has done solid tapasya in their life. Third way Vyasadeva says tapasya manifests in the form of ashirvad, the ability to give blessings to others. Why do we actually consider women to be mothers to be so worshipable? Why do we actually take blessings from mothers? Why do we recommend it so much? So that they have done the tapasya of holding the child in the womb for 9 months. That single tapasya helps them develop the ability to give blessings. Vyasadeva tells Gandhari that you have done tapasya by putting your, that strip around her eyes, blindfolding her eyes for the whole lifetime, That tapasya has given you the power to give blessings to the world. And he says, your ability to give blessings lies in your eyes. Because your eyes have done the greatest tapasya. So he says, if your eyes look at anything, that thing will become like, powerful. So Rishi tells Duryodhana, you come naked in front of me. And I don't know, blindfold, I will give full power of my tapasya to you. Duryodhana comes naked, absolutely naked. In between Krishna comes. Krishna asks him, where are you going naked like this? Duryodhana says, I'm going to see mommy. Krishna says, come on, you're a grown up child, you can't go to mommy like this, you're not naked now. So Duryodhana says, he has told me to come like this. So Krishna says, come on, you have some common sense of your own, Krishna, grown up fellow. At least cover a little bit of your body and go under. So you make the and goes and Gandhari is upset with him that why he goes on this. In that part we can speak of course. But the part I'm trying to say is Gandhari, her whole focus on raising a child, raising her children was giving them external strength, making them powerful externally. But Kunti never gave power of her tapasya to her children like that. Why? She didn't focus on making them externally strong. She focused on making them internally strong. What is the difference between external strength and internal strength? External strength helps you endure physical calamities. And internal strength helps you endure problems in life. Crisis in life. Tough times in life. So many times we have this discussion on our own day after. Most of us, all of us have left our parents and living a life of so many times we have this discussion that when our parents are living a life, it's always an anxiety, right? How we take care of them, how we deal with handle each other. And one of the things that we invariably discuss is about who do we want, which person, I mean the mother or father, who has the ability to handle life alone. To say between the father and mother, who should divorce? And I tell you, every one of us feel only one thing. That if the father dies, the mother has the ability to survive on her own. But if the mother dies, the father The discussion is, who is more advantageous, man or woman? Apparently, there is some advantage on the mountain climbing, trekking, this and that. But the real adventure is life itself. So when life itself is such an adventure, who can handle the adventure of life? Generally, women have a greater ability to handle the adventure of life. Because most women focus on internal strength. Because they don't have too much external strength at all. And that's what makes women different. So instead of aligning the realities with our expected realities of life, we try to go into a different belief. We have other different kind of expectations. When you say men and women should be equal, what equality are we talking about? There is absolutely no equality on an external level. So there is great equality on different levels. So men have strength on an external level, women have strength on an internal level. Gandhari tried to make her son strong on an external level. But Kunti focused on making them strong and internal, which is 30 years. And that's why if you look at the Pandavas' lives, one after another problems, but not once they deviated from the path of Brahma. Not once they did something wrong. Why? Because they were powerful internally. And that's what Kunti offered them. So there's something known as acceptance. Then there's something known as non-acceptance. Acceptance makes you emotionally tranquil. And non-acceptance makes you emotionally agitated. Any aspect of life, look at it from this point of view. If something is not happening the way I want it to happen, and if I accept it, it becomes known as tolerance. If I don't accept it, it becomes anger. If I want something, and I don't get it. But not if I accept it, I will be angry. If I don't accept it, it will be tolerance. Fear, whenever I feel some uncertainty in life, any uncertainty brings in fear into our life. So when fear is faced with acceptance, it becomes known as adventure. Bungee jumping. Or flying from, jumping off the airplanes. What is all that? There is a lot of uncertainty. What is the guarantee that rope won't break? What is the guarantee parachute will open? No guarantee at all. I know somebody who jumped off the plane, parachute didn't open. What to do? You can't go and complain, you have to take responsibility for it. So when we accept the realities, or rather when we accept the uncertainty, it becomes adventure. But when we don't accept the uncertainty, it becomes fear. When someone has something, or has the ability to achieve something which we are not able to achieve, if you don't accept it, it becomes jealousy. But if you accept it, it becomes inspiration. You don't get jealous of Sachin Tendulkar. You don't get jealous of Aishwarya Rai. You can be jealous of it. But they can be your inspiration. If someone has hurt you and you're not able to accept it, it becomes hatred. But if you're able to accept it, it becomes forgiveness. So anything in life which is handled with non-acceptance, it becomes a negative emotion. The same thing when you handle it with acceptance, it becomes a positive one. And therefore, in life, we need to ask ourselves this very simple question. Are we here to prove to the world, or are we here to improve ourselves? Most people in life live life according to Gandhari. Prove to the world. I need to have a first child. I need to, my son has to become a king. I need to make my son very powerful. I need to do that. It's all about proving to the world. But Kunti never lived the life of improvement to the world. She lived the life of improvement to herself. And because she lived the life of improvement to herself, she didn't see comparing herself with Gandhari. She's living in palace, why am I being followed? She has 100 sons, why am I being 5? Competition. She lived the life of improvement. Kunti never wanted to learn more at all. She was focusing on improving herself. Gandhari was focusing on improving herself. And therefore, this is what we need to decide. We need to decide whether you want to prove ourselves to the world. We need to decide whether you want to improve ourselves. Improving comes when we start aligning our expectations with the realities of life. Accept the realities. Realities are very clear. We can't change the realities. We can only change our expectations to align with the realities of life. That acceptance makes you peaceful. I was talking about how within that tough outer personality has to always be a very soft inner personality. The real strength of women is their inner soft side. But sometimes, when you're dealing with the world, especially when you're working in the corporate world, or you know, when you are running your own business, whatever, and sometimes even with your own family, sometimes you just tend to become very tough people. Very tough people. Always, you know, firing, always left by center, back by, and all that. So also, we sometimes lose our inner softer side. The fact is that the way God has created us, the more we are in closeness, proximity with the original self that we have always been, or that we were born as, that much more we are contented with. Sometimes the environment creates a way in which we become tough, or we become very, you know, harsh people. So the reality is that the softer side has to be exhibited to someone, somewhere. Because unless you exhibit the softer side somewhere to someone, you will not be completely satisfied in life. And finally, one last thing I would like to tell you guys is that relationships. When we align our relationships of life, everything else aligns. So, the more we align our relationships, the more peaceful our mind is. So, it takes 30 years to build a relationship, but it takes 30 seconds to destroy it. That's all it means. So, the question is, can we really handle relationships without cracking them, without breaking them for a longer period of time? Generally, the reason why relationships break is because of the inability to respond. People tend to be really reactive. What we get in here is people can be responsive, not reactive. You need people who can learn to respond. There's a difference between reacting and responding. The difference is when you react, you don't think. You just speak. Just do it. And responding, you first think. There was one lady who was in a mall with her daughter. This daughter was crying like crazy. Crying, yelling, screaming, you know. So the lady was telling her daughter, "Jennifer, relax." The daughter kept crying more and more and more. This lady is telling her, "Jennifer, don't react, relax." The daughter is crying even more intensely. The lady is telling her, "Jennifer, don't create a scene over here, relax." So an old man was observing the situation. He walks up to this lady and tells her that, "Ma'am, don't you think you're talking a language that is too much adult-like? This girl does not understand the language. Why don't you speak a child-friendly language?" The lady looks at the old man and tells him, what makes you think I'm talking to her? Jennifer is my name. I'm telling myself Jennifer, relax." So many times in life, we are put in situations where how others behave is not in our control. But how we behave is very much in our control. So the quality of my communication with the world outside determines my success. But the quality of my communication with the world inside determines my success. Especially in relationships, it is very important that we start communicating with ourselves. Because reacting is very easy. To be able to respond well to complicated, volatile situations of life, you need to start communicating. The more we talk to ourselves, the better we get in relationships. And therefore, in relationships, you can never say somebody is right and somebody is wrong. Nothing like right and wrong. In relationships, it's all about perspective. You can stand in front of a mirror, you see something. But just imagine there is a two-sided mirror. And you see something, and the other fellow who is standing on the other side of the mirror, he sees something else. So both are seeing the same mirror, but they are talking about two different things. Generally, in any relationship, any differences, you are actually looking at the same thing from two sides. And therefore, they appear to be different things. Therefore, it is very important to start learning to communicate properly, with yourself. So we got many solutions of life lying within us. A family is all about differences. Nobody in a family can be perfectly aligned, as I said. The family is like a full-fledged movie. In a full-fledged movie, what is there? There is all of this. There is romance, there is boring moments, there is comedy, there is horror, there is fights. There are so many things that are there in a movie. Family life is like a full-fledged movie. You can, it's a very unpredictable situation, what happens in a family. Unfortunately, what happens is we tend to expect perfection in a family. Perfection is never there in a family. Why? Just imagine you go into a family, you enter the house. House is pink and clean, no dirt anywhere around. Clothes are all ironed, well kept, and husband is always smiling. Children are very obedient, very decent, very quiet children, and everything works out perfectly according to your, desires. Where does it happen? Does it happen at home? Does it happen in a hotel? In a hotel you find perfection. As soon as you enter the hotel, somebody is saluting you. There is a receptionist smiling over there, how can I serve you, The food in the hotel tastes every day perfect. At home, if every day tea or coffee tastes the same, it cannot be home. It is cafe coffee day. But at home, you can never predict when you are eating whether it is going to taste good or bad. That's a home. Home is a place where imperfect people try to work perfection. Home is a place where imperfect people come together to achieve perfection. You can never say home is a place where already perfect people lie. Not possible. You cannot have perfect people in one family. In fact, the family atmosphere is so unpredictable. Just now everybody laughing and smiling and enjoying themselves. Next moment, big fight. Massive fight with them, shouting, screaming. Therefore, in a family, we never say today's weather. We always say weather right now. Right now, weather seems good. Doesn't mean next moment weather will be good. But outcome also. So, family is a place where two people fight together like crazy, and next moment, shamelessly come together. That's a family. But unfortunately, what happens is people take fights too seriously. And when they take fights too seriously, there's absolutely no way And therefore, it's important to learn to see relationships, align relationships for long-term success. Because when relationship gets destroyed, it can't be found again. It can't be mended again. Everything else you can mend again. Business gets destroyed, it can come back again. Health gets destroyed to some extent, it can come back again. But relationship gets destroyed, never can bring it back to normal state. It's gone forever. And it was very simple. And human beings, we are not social animals, but we're not rational animals, but we are relational animals. We need people around us. Yesterday, somebody was talking about his boss. His boss is losing his wife to him. And he's saying, this is my poor wife. For them it's normal, for them that's like completely normal. They keep playing with Indians, they find their best to be. So the way in which Indian system of relationships is, once it breaks, it's not that you won't carry on. It's very important to have a strong
for me personally, when I they are soon spent. One of them is the various sheep in the Lord is my grandmother. That's how I learned about Ramayana. Every single day, every single night.
So for me,
basically, you said about balancing reality with expectations. So my question is for devotion. We women are constantly trying to balance the reality of our everyday life with our expectations of devotion, which is, right now it seems to me very high and unreachable in my present real situation. So can you say something about that? How do we try? We are balancing it all the time anyway, but can you speak about that?
So I want to tell you one thing for sure. Krishna comes into our life not to burden us, but to take care of us. That's the purpose of Krishna comes into our life. But if you actually feel that Krishna is burdening you, and that's not the right way of seeing spiritual lives. So when we look at spiritual life, we practice spiritual life, we have to practice it happily. Whatever little we practice. If you're not happily able to practice spiritual life, then it won't last for too long. So we need to find a way in which we can practice Krishna consciousness. That's the essence of what I would like to share with you. So if you find anything within a burden, please don't do it. That won't last for too long. But if you can find a way in which you can practice your spiritual life very lightly, happily, joyfully, that's the most best way of practicing.
So the level does not really matter, but the peace and the happiness my practice is
you
important.
Need to grow organically. Mm-hmm. You need to grow organically. See, when you grow organically, then everything becomes natural. You understand? Like for example, when a child is in first standard, there is a certain amount of subjects that he studies. The same child as he goes to next standard, he studies more complicated subjects, but he is not burdened too much by it. He is like slowly growing, evolving. So when a 10th standard child is talking about, 1 plus 1 is 2, it's not a burden for him. It's so easy, right? But the first standard child, you talk to him about 1 plus 1, you think 10 times. Because it's a burden right now, But as you keep growing, your ability to handle certain burdens increases. That's what spiritual life is. So in the beginning, chanting one round makes you feel like impossible. Almost like dying. And there are 16 rounds, that's like suicide, You just have not peace. As you keep doing it, that person's capacity increases. Now it doesn't give you a burden anymore. So you increase when you feel like you already have the ability to handle this burden that you're carrying currently. And that is no more a burden, you take the next step. Spiritual life is about swimming against the current. For you to swim against the current, you have to constantly strive, constantly endeavor. The moment you stop endeavoring, you go behind. Always. So as you grow slowly, just like you go to a gym, when you exercise first for 5 minutes, all your body parts start beating. But as you keep exercising, for 1 hour you don't know nothing else. The same thing is with japa and with our spiritual lives. We are called a japa gym. This is our Krishna consciousness. It's not a 10 minutes. Then you are quite cool about it. That's the way I would say. Make sense?
Thank you very much.
She mentioned that Mata Sita, she took
Oh, no, it's not like that. It's about the quality of the room. It's important to have forgiveness as your inner room. You should know when to forgive.
Who to forgive you?
And why to forgive? Because sometimes when we hold grudge in our heart, we're actually hurting ourselves. So many times, of course, when it comes to exploitation, we can't keep quiet. Definitely cannot. I wouldn't advise you to keep any exploitation. But what I'm talking about is our ability to tolerate a few shortcomings of people. What I spoke is very gross examples, but I'm just giving you the example to talk to you about how important it is to have a virtue of being a man. Don't get into the context of, you know, women being forgiven and so on, the way it goes. It's about how one needs to learn to let go. And especially when it comes to certain people's natures. There are certain people who are always going to behave badly. Now, how bad is bad? That's the question that we need to ask ourselves. Some people, bad means really bad. And some people, bad means like, you know, talking a bad word. Or, you know, when you cook something, give it to your husband, he doesn't need to come back. That can be unforgivable for people. I cannot forgive you in my life. You understand? So you need to know what is bad. So if something really bad happens, somebody has something really bad to you, how bad is bad? So I'm talking about increasing the limit of what bad means. We get stuck in petty things sometimes. And those petty things increase our relationship a lot. So we can learn to let go of those petty things. Because the goal is more important than just our goal. There's something known as Shreyas and something known as Prayas. Shreyas means long-term goals, Prayas means short-term goals. So in relationships, you have to always look at long-term. Like in our childhood, study this for a farmer that had a end that laid the golden egg. Mm-hmm. Every day one golden egg would come out. And the farmer at some point said, I'm really eating too much. Front part is eating too much, back part is losing too much. I'll cut the back part, only keep the back part, throw the front part out. So you throw the front part out, the back part of the short living eggs. That's what religions are. So the front part is the back part. Back part is golden eggs, very nice. You all get something to your that inspires us. But the front part eats, and he eats a lot. So every relationship, there is a lot of sacrifice going into it. Yeah. Sometimes the sacrifice gets built for it. Come on, he's only eating so much. What do I get? One golden egg in a day, that's too much, you know. Sometimes you don't get the one golden egg also in a day. You say, what are we doing this for? Sometimes you just feel like giving up. What I remember is that the farmer had to have patience. One golden egg a day means something comes out. I shouldn't strangle the hand in such a way that nothing comes out of it eventually. That's what you need to look at. Am I looking at long-term goals or am I looking at short-term goals? If you focus on short-term pleasures, you get it, but it won't last for long. But look at long-term goals. You get it. There's a lot of sacrifice involved in that. The boy said, sweetest experience of relationship is after 24 years. Being good. That's when you actually start experiencing this business. Just 25 years is a lot. A lot of problems, a lot of reasons, a lot of sacrifices more than anything that happened.
He said Kunti Mata focuses on her internal endure internal strength. Endure that internal strength. From Kunti's book, we read that she makes a statement, Katam Pashyamahi, of how we women can understand the Krishna. Is that the quality of her modesty or humility that endures the internal strength? Or you said that we have to communicate within ourselves to get that internal strength. So is the modesty the key word for women of today? To tell ourselves. help us to endure this internal strength versus downhill.
See, everyone needs humility, not just one. One of the qualities of specialization. But many people misunderstand what humility is. Humility is
we could not hear that. We couldn't hear that. What is?
I said humility is a lot connected with taking responsibility. Let me give an example. When Hanumanji was in Lanka, you know, the Sita. So Hanumanji was in a very tiny form. And then when Sita asked him, "What is your actual size?" Hanumanji took a huge form. And then Sita was confused. So she asked Hanumanji, "Are you small or are you big? What's your original size?" Hanumanji said, "I'm actually only small, but for the sake of the Lord, I can take any size." So when he's talking about size, he's talking about responsibility. So humility, many times people think that humility means I'm nothing. But humility also means I can do something tangible and still feel I'm nothing. Still feel is not me doing it. That's actually humility. When you actually do something and don't take the credit for it, that's humility. So many times people think that not doing anything is humility. So in a relationship, when you talk about being humble, it's about knowing your Lord, but not wanting credit from it. That's what. So I always give example of leadership of people being like vanilla essence in cake. One drop of vanilla essence. This pervades all over the cake. Any side of the cake, you can taste the vanilla essence. That's what the role of human being should be in others' lives. Like vanilla essence. You can't see vanilla essence everywhere, but you can taste it everywhere. And that is the way in which we need to enter people's lives. That means it's not that we impose our presence. We say, "I am present in your life." But at the same time, without our presence, the person feels life is incomplete. That's what humility does. That's the kind of way, it's a very it's a subtle way of being, subtle way of how relationship works.
Thanks, sir.
Like you were talking about just now, about if you do something, you don't accept or you don't want any appreciation for it. The other side is criticism. You do something and you get criticized for it. How to deal with it? Like, the ego just makes you feel very bad. Why I have been.
First thing, let me give you one advice. When you get criticized, immediately don't say anything. Because immediately when you say something, you will always say the wrong things. I always tell people that we love somebody. So one thing that you never do is really love someone, that's really very important for you, is have a discussion with them. Like in the Ramayana, you find Lord Ram, when he was, this news that he has to go to the forest for 14 years. Outside the front of the team, he heard the news. And Lakshman was so angry, boiling man. He wanted to go in and kill his father and mother. Actually, was when he swore in his hand, but actually, he wanted to go and kill his parents. And Ram came out, he saw Lakshman angry facing the swore in his hand. I know Ram did. Ram just ignored him and walked away. Lakshman was doing it. Why didn't he look at me also? Why didn't he talk to me at all? You know why Ram didn't talk to him? So Ram realized two things are happening over there. One is Lakshman is angry. Second thing, he is in front of so many people. The whole of Ayodhya is standing over there. So in front of people, when an angry person is discussed with, you have a discussion with an angry person, the angry person becomes more angry. Because the angry person sees that everybody else realizes that I am a fool. Understand? Therefore, when you are angry or you see the other person angry, don't have this wait for that. And when the right opportunity comes, speak about how that statement hurt you. And And then, when you're speaking, when you're peaceful and you're speaking now, your tone is very different than when you're agitated and speaking. People cannot handle feedback when it's given the wrong tone. The only thing you need to do is to lock down. It's not that you don't, it's not that you don't give the feedback. You give it. Definitely you give it. But at the right time. See, for feedback to enter into his mind, the mind should be prepared first. It takes a certain amount of time to prepare the mind.
What is the cost of Vada Pav? It fills the belly. This fellow said 5 rupees. He said, give me one Vada Pav. He ate, nothing happened. Then he said, give me one more. He ate 7 Vada Pavs. And then he gave 7 Vada Pav, filled his belly. He gave 5 rupees to that fellow. He said, stupid fellow, you ate 7 Vada Pavs. You had to pay, you know, 25 rupees for him. He said, no. I asked you very clearly, what is the cost of Vada Pav that fills the belly? The 7th one filled the belly, so I paid for the 7th one only. You want your feedback. First, you should give feedback only when the mind is prepared for itself. So, generally, when you are giving feedback, not the time to observe. Now, you are giving feedback when there is peak of anger, or you are in a disturbed mind, or the other person is in a disturbed mind. That time, you are determined to wait for the right time. And you will get all right.
You don't reply, you want to keep quiet. That also is taken as something negative, that the person is not even replying to you.
See, sometimes now, not speaking is better than speaking. See, words hurt more than silence. Silence doesn't hurt so much. Words hurt a lot. Instead of speaking the wrong words, better speak the words in the communication language of silence. And you have to find out, see, between people,
you have to learn to develop a new language. You can't use the same English that exists, you know. You have to have your own language of communication between each other. And sometimes the language of communication is silent also. You have to tell, when you are having a normal conversation, you have to tell, silence means this. That's a jagger. That's how you pass a message.
Anything else? This evening we have again Prabhu's lecture in the Senior Ceremonial Center between 8 and 10. The topic is South India.
Amazing stories.